A Ted Lasso podcast and post show recaps. You better believe it. Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk. I'm Josh Wigler. I'm joined here by a man who is never derailed by negative feedback on Twitter, Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how you doing?
I'm just fine. I am never derailed by negative feedback on Twitter because my ego is so huge.
Tell me,
Josh,
about that. How do you survive? How do you manage that?
You have to really think exceptionally highly of yourself so that when you receive the negative feedbacks, you're like, that fucking person's wrong.
Yeah.
That's well, it.
No, that guy got it wrong.
Just another wrong person.
Wow. Yeah. You need to talk to Nate.
Probably not the healthiest way to handle it, but it's certainly a way.
You need to speak with Nate, our boy Nate, who's having some struggles here in Headspace, Season 2, Episode 7 of Ted Lasso. We are going to talk about it today. Apologies for getting the podcast up a tad bit late. It happens. What are you going to do? We're here now. We're talking about it all. We want to get feedback from you. TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com is our email address. You could also talk to Antonio and I in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, where we have the Ted Lasso channel. It is vibrant. We've got a lot of action in there, lots to draw from for our conversation today. First of all, Antonio, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. This is a holiday weekend. So, yeah, we're a little late, but the relaxation and the R&R on our ends was hopefully appreciated by you, and hopefully people can understand that.
Yeah, it was really hard to like get into the right headspace to podcast about Ted Lasso today. I think like probably the biggest thing was like just figuring out where to sit. You know, like, do I lie down on the couch? Do I sit in this chair? Wait, if I lie down, do I Don Draper it? I got to say that Don Draper was like that whole scene where Ted is like trying to sit down across from Dr. Fieldstone was deeply cringeworthy in a way that was really awful. I want to shout Todd the librarian, who says the same thing. The whole sequence with Ted on the couch was almost too cringy for me. But ending with the doctor saying, probably sitting is best, killed me. It was really hard for me to watch Ted sit down in therapy. But the Don Draper was very, 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 very funny.
Let me ask you this, and I want to jump right in on this, because I agree that the fits and starts of Ted in therapy were certainly a highlight of this episode for me, especially when you talk about some of the other stuff that happened in this episode, which was either uncomfortable in some cases with Roy and Keeley, or downright like aggressively uncomfortable in the case of what was happening with Nate. But generally speaking, with this particular episode, with Headspace and Season 2, Episode 7, where we're at this part of the Ted Lasso season, we had talked previously about how they broke a 10-episode season, and then Apple came to them and said, hey, we would like you to add two more. Do you think, Josh, we had previously heard that that the second one they added wouldn't feel as standalone as the Christmas episode?
Right, that they had baked it in such a way that it fit with the grander storyline of the season.
Yes. So
it's not going to like stick out like a Christmas episode.
I want to give a shout out to Mr. Cranky Pants in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, who posted, my money is on tonight's episode being the other, quote, extra episode that was ordered after the writers had beat out the entire season. I felt the wheel spinning, which is unfortunate, but I feel like we're going to get a much more propulsive and eventful chapter with next week's episode. I mean, look at that running time, so I'm not really complaining. I guess next week's episode is a long one. Do you agree with this? Do you think this is likely to have been the other episode that was kind of jammed in?
Have you seen any like press around it, interviews in which this was stated that was very clearly part of the narrative around the Christmas episode? I feel like you read the interviews maybe more often than I do. I don't know if you encountered this at all.
I read a couple of articles about this week's episode, but nothing that seemed to tip that off. So I'm not sure if that's true or not. But I mean, I feel like it seems likely.
It feels very likely to me. Like, I think, like I don't want to take away from people who really loved this episode. I know that there definitely are a lot of people who really enjoyed this week. And I'm certainly, especially in the middle of, like, I hate this. Ted Lasso backlash. Ugh. Like, I hate saying that. What a gross phrase. But, like, in the middle of Ted Lasso backlash, I don't want to, like, add any fuel to that whatsoever. I will quickly say I think that this is my least favorite episode of the show. I still think that I enjoy this episode of TV more than I enjoy most episodes of other shows. So I still had a great time, but it did feel a little wheel spinny to me in certain ways, to the point where, like, where we get by the end of it with Ted and therapy is probably exactly where we could have left off from last time into getting into whatever's going to come after this week's episode, right? Like, you know, the whole journey of his therapeutic process this week is sort of just like getting him on board fully with, like, it wasn't just like an impulsive thing. And like, now he actually does want help from Dr. Featherstone, Dr. Fieldstone. Featherstone's from Preacher. That, like, this is like the journey that he's on. I feel like we could have gone from last week to next week without this week. There's a lot about the Roy and Keeley stuff that I enjoy, and I think that that's a worthy storyline to put on television, but I think it also feels like it's one and done in the span of an episode, Antonio. Like, it happens and then we can remove that. I feel like it's very easy to see how, like, that's not gonna have, like, massive ramifications for things that are down the line. At least for me, it feels like it's pretty much dealt with. The big one, obviously, is what happens with Nate. And I was thinking about this because this episode otherwise does feel potentially like filler. Like, I can imagine that this is one of those episodes that they had to, like, slot in because they had the additional episode order, and that they could find a way to, like, fit all of this stuff in. But what happens with Nate is very significant by the end of this. Was it the kind of thing that they were able to, like, remove a piece of last week's episode, right? Where, like, he's, you know, he's the Wonder Kid and he's getting all this awesome feedback, and then suddenly he gets very bad feedback and he has a very bad reaction to that. Could you have had that be, like, sort of like a grim ending to what was otherwise a victory for Nate last week? I feel like that's the kind of thing that, when you're having to, like, pivot in the face of, like, a new episode order, that you could find the space to, like, offload that from what could have very naturally occurred last week to happening this week. So with all of that said, unless we get some sort of, you know, confirmation from the creators that there is a different episode that meets this criteria of this was the one that we had to, like, kind of, like, fit in somewhere, this feels like the one to me. Is kind of where I land with it.
Same for me. And for the reasons you said, and just, like, I think the Ted one is the most persuasive to me because I haven't really done the calculus in my realm to decide where I feel like this episode falls on all the episodes of Ted Lasso, my favorite, least favorite, etc. But I will say the stuff with Ted is the stuff that I thought was the best moments of the episode. And you can imagine a world where we just have Ted breaking down in therapy and really getting into it with Dr. Sharon next episode or the episode to come. And we didn't really, quote unquote, miss anything. If we don't have this bit of Ted's fits and starts in getting into therapy, it makes sense. And I'm glad it's there. But I don't necessarily feel like if you told me that there was a season or a version of the season without it, we'd be missing something. So that's the part that's really persuasive to me, is it was well executed, well done, and ultimately just a way to get Ted in the room and being honest. And I think it's more true to the character that he had the fits and starts, that the bird was nodding and that Ted was nodding no, and that Ted stopped the nodding and was ready to stop agreeing or disagreeing and just start getting real, the real world. But but I will say, like, that was a part where I thought, okay, well, I really liked it, but if we didn't have it, I don't feel like the season would be missing anything. Certainly felt the same way about the Roy and Keeley situation, which, of course, makes sense that there would be some tension in this relationship where they're spending a lot more time together and that would play out that way. But ultimately, at least for now, seems to be resolved and wrapped by Roy forcing Keely to bathe. So,
oh man,
I mean, it just didn't feel like that nice of a thing. It's like, hey, get in the bathtub and sit here for 3 hours. I won't bother you. Maybe she didn't want to take a bath.
Maybe it's, I have to know what happens to Robert Langdon. Yes,
exactly. I must know about this albino. Yeah. Like, no, I don't know. But
wait, the master is who? But that whole chapter. Yeah.
Can we talk about, I just wanted to sidetrack here.
Da Vinci Code spoilers are imminent, folks.
Yeah, well, not really. I won't spoil anything. I will just say, my aunt, who is deceased, may she rest in peace, recommended. She was a voracious reader of mysteries, paperbacks, popular fiction, etc. She handed me The Angels and Demons, which is a book that was written, the Robert Langdon book that was written before The Da Vinci Code, and said, you have to read this book. And everyone in the family read it. We were all addicted. So I began like meticulously showing up to a local bookstore waiting for the next Dan Brown book, such that people in my life were making fun of me about, quote, the book. And how can you be you're still checking for the book? The book will be out when it's out. Why are you doing this? Why do we have to look for the book? Then The Da Vinci Code came out and it became what it became. And I lorded that over those people forever. I was like, oh, looks like I knew about the book, huh? Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. I was like I was a Robert Langdon hipster is what I'm saying.
That's good.
Thanks to my Aunt Bibi. May she rest in peace.
Did you have the Robert Langdon, Tom Hanks hair at the time?
No, I didn't go all in. And by the way, that dude from Succession, Nate, is playing Robert Langdon on the Peacock show.
Yes.
And he's like the most punchable dude, like maybe of all time.
He's a terrible pick for Robert Langdon.
That guy. But how so is he Robert Langdon?
So is Tom Hanks.
Yeah, Tom Hanks also not Robert Langdon. Who would you have picked? Sam Neill? Like, oh, who's your
Sam
Robert
Neill
Langdon?
Is a good pick. I mean, there's a world where once upon a time, I mean, I guess it'd be too on the nose. It's like a Harrison Ford, you know? Like,
yeah.
But like, he can't be Robert Langdon and Indiana Jones. That's right, just greedy.
You can't do it.
But you need someone of that mold. Sam Neill definitely fits the bill. But
I wonder who Roy Kent would pick to play Robert Langdon
himself.
I'm in for that.
Yeah, let's redo this and cast Brett Goldstein as Wolverine, as Robert Langdon.
Hey, listen, I have an idea. We could just CGI him into all those roles.
Oh, my God, yes. There is the whole Roy Kent is CGI with an incredible reaction from Brett Goldstein. I just do normal human shit. It's very, very funny. If you have not sought it out, you can look up that discourse should you choose it. But yeah,
Roy and Keeley stuff. I just felt like the Roy and Keeley stuff was very throwaway. It was
sure.
It was entertaining. The "Are you talking about me?" joke, very entertaining. Like, and the payoff was pretty brutal when they really did clash. It was upsetting, but it was wrapped. I was wrapped in one episode. But correct. I agree with you that the Nate stuff is like. Is there a world where they pulled that from somewhere else? Sure. Is the world where they expanded on it a little bit? Definitely. But that's the part where it's like, it does feel like there's character momentum there, and not for the better, by the way. We're certainly building on things that we joked about or laughed about at the beginning of the season, or even last season, right? Where Nate was so quick to berate the team once you gave him the floor. He was ready to really rip into people, and that was chalked up as banter, which is fine. It's gone beyond banter, as Beard pointed out. It's weird and personal and like not banter anymore. And taking it out on Will the way he does is not banter. That was cruel abuse. So
yes,
this does feel like a actual move by Nate, and not something that we've seen before. So it's a little harder for me to say what would that have been without if this was the one that was added. But I think we have to see the rest to see exactly where this fits.
Right. I mean, like I could imagine the world where like his reaction to Will, that there are a couple of extra scenes that exist in the Signal. You know, and I think like, you know, we leave last week, you know, feeling like. You know, certainly a little more optimistic for Nate. Certainly I did, right? Like, I was like, there you go. Yeah, this has become like my recurring Ted Lasso, but it's like, oh, well, there's no more character drama for that guy. That's great. It's just going to be really happy moving forward, and we don't have to worry about anything anymore, right? It's like, no. Roy Kent is still going to be on the show, and he is at risk of heartbreak. No, Nate is not just like going to coach Richmond to a single victory, and everyone will love him forever now. This thing, right? Like this need for respect, to be taken seriously, for recognition, for all of the things that are going on with Nate. It's still very much a piece of the show. And this week, of course, I really do think like the thing to talk about, because as it pertains to Ted, like I feel like we like called a lot of like sort of what Ted's vibe around therapy might be like, that like he would have this feeling of like empowerment of like, I'm ready for the appointment. Then he gets the appointment. He's not ready to take it seriously. He walks out. He comes back. He reads Sharon for filth. He comes back. He's on board. And now we're able to start cooking with some gas, hopefully as soon as next week. Like, I think like we're no different, right, with where we are with him right now than we were when we were talking about Ted going to therapy last time.
Right. And I think that the stops and starts do make sense. And anyone who has needed help, whether it's with addiction issues, whether it's with mental health support, can tell you, like, you might get into a position where
it's very real.
Yeah, you hit your bottom and you're ready for help. You're ready to make an appointment. Then you get to the appointment. You don't want any part of it.
Right.
And you have to find a way to say, in that moment, I thought I was ready. But now with the light of day and a little bit of sleep and a little bit of rest and some of that behind me, I think I'm fine. I don't need it anymore.
Right.
And so seeing Ted go through that, very relatable, very real. We had a lot of great messages in the post-show recaps patron Discord about people sharing how that was relatable for them. And so I don't want to yuck anyone's yum, as you would say, Josh. I credit that phrase to you, by the way. It's probably from something, but you're the only person that I really heard popularize it. So I give you credit when I think of that phrase. I don't know if that's right or not.
I think I got it from when Cynthia Nixon said it about having lox on a cinnamon bagel, a cinnamon raisin bagel. Which happened while she was running for governor of New York.
Oh, I thought you were bringing Sex and the City into this.
No, I mean, like, technically, like, I'm sure that that occurred at some point in her life, but, like, there's more about the bagel and the fish and the cinnamon raisin bagel, and I think someone was like, ew, that's your breakfast order? She goes, don't yuck my yum.
There you go.
And so that was when I heard it the first time. You'd
it's
have
almost
to ask
like she
her,
would have been a better governor than the one they ended up with.
You'd have to ask her.
No comment on that.
That's not my fault, I'll tell you. you'd have to ask
maybe
her.
Maybe people just did not want to vote for someone named Nixon.
It's
I mean,
possible.
Maybe that's all there is to it, right? Yeah. Like, maybe there was a little too much.
Too late to change.
In our genetic memory.
But I think, like, everything that happened with Ted, it was cringeworthy, where I think it was appropriately cringeworthy.
Yes.
This stuff is not funny, really, to me anymore.
No.
Which I hope is part of the point of the show, but it's really not. Like, this stuff is like, this is a wounded bird, you know, and we want to nurse him back to health, and we want to get him back in the right shape, you know. We're concerned about our guy here, so like all of like the lying down and everything like that, but like the unpreparedness, the lack of readiness for it, the desire to walk away, his feelings towards therapy generally that he articulates to Sharon, like, I think to some people probably felt like surprising, because it is kind of antithetical to like Ted's whole thing. I know I've talked about that a bit along the way, but I think that there's the armchair therapizing psychoanalysis of Ted Lasso, but like I think like there's like the self-loathing component. There's like the, you know, there's like sort of a reflection of what Sharon's field purports to do versus what Ted, in his viewpoint of himself as a professional, what he purports that to mean. That there is this this parallelism that somehow comes into conflict as well, I think is for me, especially with this week, and it's a credit to this episode and seeing the way that these first few sessions played out, that it makes a good measure of sense to me that this is how Ted was going to react to all of this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you said wounded bird. I mean, we got a lot of wing flapping going on here. Like, and I really did like how Dr. Fieldstone just let him do it and just let it go. And then she said, I think sitting would be best after all of those antics and not responding to him. She's a great foil for Ted. And I know that she's not intending to be a foil, but he's trying to shuck and jive his way and like trying to like make a performance out of it, right? Like it's all very like performative what he's doing. And he's trying to like move his hands around and just act all over the top and expecting, that to be something that she will respond to. And her response is perfect, which is no response, which is not even acknowledging it. And I really like that she said the session began the minute you walked in. Because clearly, like, that means that she's reading all that as part of his wounded bird nature, right? Like, I diagnosed you the second you walked in the door, Josh, like I said, from the West Wing. It's very reminiscent of that, how a therapist is just in total control and understanding. It's not about that. It's about the person coming to their own realization and about letting that person realize what's going on. That's when it's going to sink in, no matter how well you realize it as the therapist. I'm speaking as a therapist. I'm not a therapist. But it really feels that way to me. And so I really like how that played out. I also love the, speaking of birds, the actual bird there with the, I don't know, are those things thermometers? Like, what are those things? They're just sure. Like tchotchkes?
Yeah. It's a little playful thing. It's probably, somewhat soothing, metronome adjacent, you know?
Yeah.
Keeping the pulse. You know, I don't know that I have a ton more to say about what's going on with Ted quite yet. Like, I feel like what's going on with Ted this week is consistent with where we've been with him and really where we left him. And I felt like I'm not mad that we've seen, you know, that we saw all that we saw this week. And I think that there's certainly utility for it. I don't know that I necessarily needed to see all of this stuff. So I wonder, you know, in that regard, I do think that this feels like something that could have been tacked on a little bit late. But maybe we're wrong. I have no idea. I think the point being that, like, if there is a huge forward momentum development, it's absolutely what's up with Nate. And it's concerning. It is very concerning that Nate is behaving the way that he's behaving, especially by the end of the episode. You know, what he says to Colin is not great. But the way that he the show, like, can't, like, I thought it was really interesting the way that they filmed this, Antonio, that, like, we're not even looking at Nate reaming at Will, you know?
It's too uncomfortable.
We can't even see that. Like, right, that, it's right. Like, this isn't our show. We can't, like, that's, like, showing you, like, R-rated violence on Ted Lasso. Like, this is tough. We don't want to see this.
Like, famously in Taxi Driver, the Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro joint, he's a very troubled individual, right? And we see ultra violence in that movie, not to spoil anything, but bloody, bloody ultra violence.
Right.
But there is a moment in the movie where he has a phone conversation that is ostensibly a normal phone conversation that is supposed to be like him completely not connecting with someone. And it gets so awkward that the camera just pans away and looks down the hallway as he continues to have the conversation off screen, because that is the thing that we can't see.
Right.
And I felt very similar about this thing with Nate, for sure. I mean, with the conversation you're mentioning with Colin, Nate shows him his back for the first, you know, two-thirds of it, right? He won't even turn around.
Right.
Because Colin's not even worth looking at. That in and of itself says, like, you're not worth looking at. I don't want to see you. Like, that is a thing. But when we as the audience aren't allowed to see a thing that's happening, it sends a very different message, and it makes it seem a lot more horrible. So, It was a lot. It was a lot. And I don't think anybody feels good about it. Like, none of the feedback I've seen on Twitter, anywhere on the internet, on our Discord, like, none of that is feedback where everyone's like, oh man, Nate's in a great spot. I love seeing that.
Anyone feel good about it? Yeah, you know, no, like,
everyone feels super bad about
it. It's bad. He's reaming this poor kid out. Like, it's already not good what he is saying to one of the athletes on the team. Like, that's not okay. But especially, like, the way that he treats Will at the end of it is such an escalation when he's already been pretty rough with him throughout the season. And I'm so concerned about where this is going. Not concerned in the sense that, like, I don't think that there's, like, a good plan in place from a writing perspective. I again trust the process here. But I think that this speaks to, you know, in, like, response to, again, I'm going to do, like, the Higgins, like, gagging noise every time I have to talk about the Ted Lasso backlash. But I believe Bill Lawrence, you know, one of the developers and creators of the show and executive producers of the show, was basically like, keep watching. There is tension this season. And it's like, yeah, man, I feel extraordinarily tense about Nate right now. I, Antonio, am really struggling to see, at least short term, how this has any kind of happy resolution here in season two.
Without spoiling anything, I don't even know if I should say this. I will just say, you can look it up. They have referred to this season with a pop cultural touchstone. Are you aware of what Jason Sudeikis referred to this as their season of?
No, but I think if people are listening to a Ted Lasso podcast, they're down to hear this. And if they're not, I would say skip ahead a minute. Skip ahead a minute in your podcast.
1 minute. We'll do one full minute. 30 seconds and that's it. I will watch the clock here.
All right.
He basically said it's their Empire Strikes Back season.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And of course, there's, you know, darkness in Empire Strikes Back. We're going to spoil that. Ted's going to lose a hand that he will find out about his father, which will be a little bit rough, probably. We're going to get into the real father issues. And maybe that's what he meant by it, that father issues are going to be put in center stage and there's going to be a big confrontation in that regard. And I don't know. We've speculated a lot about Ted. We've seen it on display with Nate. So that's possible, I guess. But ultimately, they said it in the context of this show. The Dark Forest doesn't come along at the beginning, and it's not there for the end. It's there smack dab in the middle, and Ted tells the team, and I guess thereby the audience, that this is their Dark Forest moment, that they're in the Dark Forest right now. So I think it's important to trust the process and keep that in mind, right? Like, the show has told us this is their Dark Forest moment. This is that's where they're at right now. But they have told us that happens in the middle of things, not at the beginning or the end. And we know it's a 3-season plan. So if this is the Dark Forest season and some difficult things are going to still happen, it doesn't mean that we're going to end up that way. And I think we will have good things to come. I guess we'll be dancing with Ewoks soon to come, Josh.
Oh my God. Yup, nub. I'm trying to think of where we're going with this. I mean, I think that there's a very important conversation that the show is having about a guy like Nate, who was shown so much unexpected respect and appreciation as a human being by the coach of AFC Richmond, right? That he has this person not only ask for his name, but he remembers it. And his story across that season is becoming taken so seriously that he is given a position on the coaching staff. And that's happening really quickly. And I don't know if the message here or the thing to explore here is necessarily like that wasn't a good thing to do, but are there other parts of the process that have been unchecked as it regards Ted and Nate? I think they've let a lot of, they've witnessed a lot of Nate's behavior. And until this one where Beard says what he says to Nate, it hasn't really come up in a very direct way.
The Ted part is very important,
yes,
because that's Nate's first question to Beard when Beard confronts him is, you didn't tell Ted, did you? And as we have seen throughout this season, Ted laughs when Nate says, we need a big dog to talk to Isaac. I'll do it. And Ted laughs right in his face. And Ted's like, oh, you were being serious. Did you know that, Beard? And Beard's like, yeah, man. So Ted is doing that. A lot of this is happening while Ted is asleep at the wheel. And I think it's a small thing. But in this episode, when Ted witnesses Nate apologize to the team and Ted says, I feel like I missed something, Ted's metaphor that he uses is like, this is when you leave the stove on and you pass out too early after having too many beers while watching Citizen Kane, like such a specific reference that it's clear that it has happened. And I think it speaks to Ted being asleep at the wheel, maybe Ted leaning into the substance abuse, like all the things that we know have been happening with Ted mean that Ted has not been there meaningfully to capitalize or to build on what he was building with Nate in season one. And we saw a look at this in season one, right? When Ned is trying to when Nate is trying to slide the thoughts from the team talk under the door, in the episode Make Rebecca Great Again, when they're in Liverpool, and Ted is a little bit drunk and a little bit harried about the divorce, and he shouts at Nate and screams at him, and Nate runs away scared. Like, we've seen what a negative relationship between Ted and Nate can look like, and it has happened on this show, and I think it's happening right now with Ted's lack of oversight and management, Nate bullying Will so much at the beginning of the season, and Ted not doing anything about it. Ted's hands-off style. In season one, when it was Nate being bullied, Ted had a plan to make Roy take care of it. I don't know if Ted has a plan this time around. I think this might actually just be dereliction of duty, and not that he has some grand plan where Beard and Nate will figure out Nate's issues on their own without Ted needing to step in. Like, I definitely think this is a product. I mean, Nate stepping up and being Nate the Great, the Wonder Kid, was only because of Ted's issues, was only because Ted ran off the pitch in fear, in panic. So I think ultimately this is a lot of what's happening with Nate has to be cast along what's happening with Nate
for sure.
And Ted, which is about what's happening with Ted. So that's conflict, man. That's conflict. That's right here in the season.
Yeah. Cause I think like, this is, you know, Nate continues to behave this way. And if it escalates beyond the latest escalation, which you imagine it very well could, considering we are up through episode 7 of 12, you know, we still got some road here. That, like, does Nate have a job here at the end of the season type of a deal, you know? And like, what is Ted's role in that? Like, are there, you know, there, it's not a question. There are lines that you can't uncross, right? Like, you know, there are certain things that you can't like get pep talked out of, you know, you can't like pep talk your way out of certain bad behavior. Like that's just not an option. And I'm concerned. I'm very nervous about that. And I think like the way that that runs in tandem with Ted himself feeling a bit adrift. And if for him, like if the real success for Ted is less about like the win-loss record in terms of like how the team is actually performing out there in the sport, and is more about like the win-loss record in terms of the culture of AFC Richmond, this is a huge, huge loss that is happening right now that he seems to be completely unaware of. And it's got potential to be like very, very, very prickly the further down the field we get with both of these characters.
Definitely. Especially because you can see that for Nate, it isn't that he resorts to being, let's just say a little bit harsh or a little bit like the banter that he delivers on the field when he says in front of the guys, like, I benched your ass the other day, Colin. Like the team, I was like, ooh, you know, like Nate snapped on him. That's the way it goes. And that's sort of how they responded to his locker room talk in season one.
Right.
Just like, oh yeah, he's got banter. Like Nate has the ability to cut at us. And there's a little bit of respect that comes with that. It's just like, okay, you can take it, but you can dish it out. Like we're all on the same page here. But then how personal he gets sometimes and how quickly he can get to that personal, and in the wrong context, it can seem like it's really headed in a bad direction. So that's the part that I think is the most concerning. When you said, you know, could this end with Nate losing his job? I hadn't actually thought of that. I will say when he was scrolling through his mentions on Twitter, I thought he was going to slide into the DMs. And I thought, okay, here's a guy who's been thirsty. He's been thirsty for the adulation. For him, in the way he's described it, that often comes hand in hand with the romantic adulation. I mean, I think it's a little fair probably to call Nate an incel. And in that, that word contains a lot of toxic, wrapped up, difficult thoughts, to embrace or to confront, especially for a character that we love. It's a lot easier to play a role like that or a character like that when they're being played for love and they're being played for kindness. When you lean into the darkness and the toxic nature of that, I think it becomes difficult. And I do think that that's out there with Nate. That's always been something that he's articulated. When he burns his most important an item in season one, it's a pair of sunglasses that a woman once complimented him while he was wearing. Like, that's the most important thing he's got to burn.
Yeah.
I don't think this is because Nate's a shallow guy. I think it's because Nate is a guy who desperately needs validation. He's not getting it at home. So when he gets a taste of it, it's not surprising to me that it goes to his head. I just thought it might go to his head in a slightly different way. But clearly the way it's going to his head is to be really difficult with how he uses his power, and really gross. So that's the sort of thing that you can definitely imagine, as you're saying, does not end well. I don't know what else it could take. My assumption was at some point that Nate would be publicly blasting Ted Lasso. I thought that might happen really right after that match, when Nate kind of took the stage there after Ted walked off. I really thought there was a possibility in his post-match presser that Nate would really put Ted Lasso on blast and say, you know, we don't need Ted to win. Like, this isn't about Ted Lasso. He just sort of poo-pooed and said, I think it was food poisoning or something. He didn't really get into it. But you could foresee a situation where the darker this gets, the more likely it is that Nate uses that platform to really blast the internal issues at AFC Richmond. So that's a part where ultimately, like I said, it's fruit of the poison tree that is Ted's issues, and that flows and grows from the divide that is created because of Ted's problems. But it is nonetheless a team problem, a Nate problem, an everyone problem, and not just a Ted problem, no, regardless of how or where it started. But I think you're really right to localize that with Ted and Nate, because I just don't think one exists without the other. We saw Ted be such a positive influence with Nate in season one.
Yes. Yeah. And so like, if that attention to detail is no longer there, you know, like,
yeah, it's leadership. The leadership is no longer there.
Right. Right. So I think that that's obviously very problematic. And I feel like there's a lot of different directions this could go, that this could be, you know, something that doesn't have such like a drastically, you know, climactic ending, that maybe that there, it's not too late. But I think that like, it is a real credit to the show that there is this feeling of tension of like, what's going on with Nate is not that great, right? Like, you know, this feeling of like Nate, the not so great right now, is not something that I think like any Ted Lasso fan, like any true Ted Lasso fan, is like marking with any level of relish, you know, like, I don't think anyone is, the edible kind, or, you know, like,
of course you knew what I was talking about.
I heard it.
A mustard man.
I was trying really hard to phrase it differently because I knew that we just wouldn't be able to say with relish without talking about condiments. I don't think
that is my TED talk.
I don't think anyone is psyched about this. You know what I mean? Like, no one is happy about this. We're concerned for this fictional character, right? You know, like, I think people really like Nate. He was a character who, like, his growth arc across season one was so wonderful to watch. And so that we're going into this direction, it's not unearned. It's not without precedent. It's not without a lot of work underneath it to get us here. I think it is an acknowledgement, as it very much is in Ted's storyline as well, that you don't just promote somebody and now they live happily ever after. Like, the process of being a healthy human being is lifelong maintenance. You know, like, this is you don't like do a thing and now it's fixed forever. You do a thing and then you probably are going to have to do another thing and then a thing after that. And you're probably going to have to be doing a lot of these things simultaneously. And it's exhausting. I don't know why I'm even saying this, because we all know that. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, but it's fascinating that a show that has the uplifting, positive, like, pure vibe of Ted Lasso can get into this in a subtle and specific way, like they're doing with Nate, and be so effective about it, right? In a way, it's like, you know, making you laugh so that your belly is exposed and then sliding a knife in between your ribs. Like,
correct.
They're really getting there with that. And they're setting, I mean, I do think the show does a fantastic job of setting the stage for this sort of thing. I mean, we can talk about every Nate scene and really map it out along this journey. And I know probably everybody in this day and age is getting sick of data visualizations, but it would be a very interesting chart, right, of peaks and valleys with Nate. And where we're at right now is a deep, deep valley. I'm not sure if it's the X or Y axis. I can't remember, but we're well below the line. And you have to remember, like, a couple of episodes ago when Nate had no confidence about getting that table, and Rebecca and Keeley were in that moment, and Rebecca helps Nate realize, like, you just have to kind of buck up and say, like, I can get whatever I want. I know who I am. And she basically says, like, you deserve whatever you want. Don't back down. And, like, that seems to be the sort of line that you feed to the wrong person at the wrong time, and you create an evil villain, like just an evil, like a true mastermind. And if you walk around as your Nate right now in the position that he's in, having been gassed by all the positive feedback, and been like just completely triggered by one negative tweet, don't back down. You deserve whatever you want. Like, that is the kind of mentality that leads you to barge into Will's office and treat him the way that he did. So the good advice they gave Nate that helped him get the table can also be bad advice when it comes to Nate making his way through difficult times. And that's why the maintenance is important.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just about this one fix and you use the wrench to tighten this thing up and all of a sudden you can get a table and you can do well in a match and you're fixed. No, it's maintenance. Like, you might have over-tightened the screw here and you might have not put yourself in a position where things are going to be fixed. So I love that we're seeing that with Nate, even though that I hate that we're seeing that with Nate.
Yeah I don't like it. Like, I'm not mad at the show for going here. Like, that's
no,
you know, it's like very important to like clarify that line. I think it is like the show's intentions right now are working. You know, like, that's the thing, is like, I think what the show is aiming for right now, yeah, they're hitting you right where they're trying to, or at least they are with me. I really don't feel good about it, but that's what they want.
Can I ask you, we talked about the father issues. I want to know, we know that Nate's in a bad way right now, and we know that it owes in no small part from what the show has shown us to his inability to please his father. Right. Like, even in this moment where Nate is on the back page of the newspaper, featured prominently, Wonder Kid, all of it. His mom knows it. Nate is just showing up with flowers, happy, clearly is showing up to get praise. His father will not give it out and instead just basically says, they say humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. In a different milieu or in a different moment, I feel like that would have been really good advice to Nate. But in that moment, it is so crushing. Is Nate's dad the key to all this? And is there a world where you feel like this gets fixed in some way by Nate coming to a better relationship or understanding with his father?
Well, I think that the show has given us a lot to chew on, as we have been talking about all season long, about all the best Cowboys having daddy issues. What's up, Jay Wilpon? You know, like, I feel like that is like very much on the mind of the show. And it is certainly no coincidence that we are framing this episode with like Nate's, you know, actions at the end of it. And we're framing that against his father having like no reaction to the Wonder Kid, you know? I don't know if that's going to be the thing that cures Nate, is like a better relationship with his father, or like, you know, like the two of them living happily ever after, whatever. You know, unfortunately, this is yet another thing where like for many of us out there in the world, you have to like come to like your own measure of peace with your relationship with your parent. And it might not be like the talk that goes well. Right. It's your outlook. It's, you know, it's this, it's that, it's how you're moving on in your life and, in conversation with the idea of your parent. Or unfortunately, in the case of many people, it's an unresolved issue forever. Yeah. You know,
maybe you don't get the chance. Maybe you don't take the chance.
Or even like, regardless of like, I even mean it less about like, you getting to sit across from that person and be like, well, this is the stuff and let's do this right now. Some people can't even, you know, like reckon with the ghost, right? Yeah. Like, this happens. It's horrible. It's terrible. Well,
yeah, you shouted out Jay, who is watching Lost in the All the Best Cowboys Have Daddy Issues, being a significant part of the first season of Lost. But over the course of the whole series, obviously, father issues, be it with Anthony Cooper or otherwise, really are center stage for a lot of the characters because these are real issues. Like, these are the things that we all carry around with us, the legacy issues, or how not even realizing, I think, how our worldview can be impacted by what we're carrying around as a result of the way we were raised or our upbringing or our relationships with those people. So it is not shocking in any way that this is what is fueling a lot of what's happening. Nate's lack of confidence, I think, is ultimately what we've noticed about his character most and what they've really put at center stage. And his lack of confidence does seem to come directly from the lack of approval from his father. His mother is so doting, so kind, so loving. It doesn't matter. Like, he probably takes that for granted in some ways because it's not what he wants. He wants it from his dad. I think his dad recognizes this and won't give it to him. And there was the wry smile when Nate got the table. And even though Nate's dad, you know, Nate's dad recognized that he was able able to pull this move for them. He sort of said, I'm not a dog. I don't need to be whistled at. But you could tell, and in that moment, he was a little bit impressed the fact that Nate pulled that off. But I'm not sure if Nate saw it, and I definitely know Nate doesn't feel it, and Nate needs it. So I do wonder if the resolution in the context of this show is not going to be so open-ended like you describe in life, and if it will be a little more... Ted cannot resolve anything that he has with his father. We know that that's been taken off the table for right. Ted, right? We know that the issues with Jamie and his dad probably aren't going to be resolved. I do feel like there's a world where the issues with Nate and his father are a little more resolved, and that maybe is the thing that helps Nate find the confidence that he's lacked. It isn't some external force. It isn't some deus ex machina. It's fixing a problem with the machine that we already know exists, and therefore it's not something that they have to drop in like a relationship or somebody that quote unquote saves Nate. Nate saves Nate in part because he confronts his father. Maybe that comes from dealing with Dr. Fieldstone. Do you feel like Nate's headed to therapy at a minimum?
I hope so. That could be the kind of thing where you could imagine therapy being something that is helpful for Ted. And this is a way to like combine all of these stories, that perhaps it is Ted who recognizes yes. that he doesn't have what Nate needs, that what Nate needs to come from somewhere else, and that Ted can only do so much. And could it be Ted that urges Nate towards something like that, and combines the storylines? That's something that I could imagine happening, but we've got some work to do to get to that point. And unfortunately, I don't know, like, depending on how Nate's dealings with his colleagues continues,
he may not get that chance.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that. I am. Yeah. And we've gone a really long time here on this podcast without saying the words Nick Muhammad, I feel like, this week. And he's just excellent. This is probably a really scary character arc for an actor to play. Like, I think it's also like the kind of thing that like you, damn it, you relish this opportunity, you know?
Is that sweet relish or dill relish?
Whatever you want.
Okay. I like a hot and spicy. Sweet and hot. Yeah.
You know, you want this as an actor. You want the conflict. You want the challenge. You want like the meaty storyline. And at the same time, on a show like this that really is about like the in many ways it's not a dissimilar reaction to like the way in which we lionize these people on Twitter, you know, tweet about Roy Kent and look at your optics. Oh my God. You know, look at your stats, and look at the kind of like love that a lot of these characters get. And to now be somebody who's a prominent character on the show who is emerging as a primary antagonist. I don't know. I hate like assigning those words to a show like Ted Lasso, but whatever, you know, for lack of better immediately available to my brain terminology, you know, that's where we'll go. It's gotta be frightening. And I think that he is, I think as an actor, he's just really, he's demonstrating, exceptional commitment to what's going on with the character as per the writing. And I'm really impressed with him. I'm really, really, really impressed with the work that he's done this season. You know, he's a great character in season one. He's a dangerous character right now. But I think that, you know, when we're talking about so many of the different people on the show and just the great jobs by so many of the different actors and like Hannah Waddingham as a queen type stuff, you know, like I feel like we really cannot overlook the fact that Nick Muhammad has a really difficult job this season. And I think that he's doing it spectacularly well.
I completely agree. It definitely, I think has the fact that he's a writer as well, I think really probably helps with the character work. I think he's probably really focused on the arc of the character, where things started, where things will head, in what direction, and all of that. My understanding, just from the past, is that they had all that stuff pretty well mapped out over the course of season one, where the characters would go from season one and beyond. So this Nate stuff has probably been in the realm since the beginning of the show. Like, they probably knew where this character was heading. I don't believe this is something that they decided after season one was written. So I do think that that comes into the performance. He knows where the character is headed. As we've said, as far as speculation goes, like, It's interesting to me that he and Ted just aren't on the same page. Like, I feel like the last time we saw them together, just the two of them, was probably in season one at some point. Maybe it was in the Liverpool episode. Might have been after that when Nate got promoted. I can't remember. But I don't think we've seen them, just the two of them together in this season. And we talked about how Ted being somewhat asleep at the wheel is impacting other characters besides Ted. We haven't seen a ton of the practical reality of that. In terms of relegation, like, we haven't seen players having to take pay cuts, people having to be sold away from the team because they can't afford it. We lost a sponsor. We don't even know necessarily why. And if you want to map that to the way Ted managed and handled the Jamie situation with Sam, and giving Sam, making Sam feel like he should have a voice because Ted didn't feel like he could adequately manage or speak for Sam in every way. He wanted to empower these players and the people around him to be who they wanted to be. And that's fine if their motives are pure. But in Nate's case, I'm not sure Ted realizes how broken Nate is, how much that needs to be fixed. And Ted's dereliction and the lack of connection between Ted and Nate seems very paramount and seems planned, and it does seem part of an arc. Nick Mohammed is playing it so well. So it will be interesting to me to see where it goes. Like I was saying, is it, I know Tate, we made the joke, a reference a couple of episodes ago when Ted finished the "What does a British Owl say" joke, about how that came from a time when Nate and Beard were very angry with Ted for not taking them seriously, that Roy needed to be benched because they were worried about relegation. The most drama we've ever seen between Beard and Ted, the most conflict we've ever seen between the two of them, was when Ted refused to learn or care about what winning meant in the context of relegation and how they couldn't be relegated. And Ted's refusal to embrace that approach really did to lead to them being relegated. So I can't imagine that Nate respects Ted so much, but he is that father figure that Nate craves approval from. So that's the relationship I'm most interested at this point with Nate,
yeah,
to see where it ends up, because you could really see him selling out Ted. Like I said, I really thought he was going to put him on blast. I don't know. Does this lead to Nate trying to undermine the team so that Ted will get fired?
I was thinking that just in terms of like things that are on the table, you know, we say like we're done with the prediction game and then we just do it anyway.
Yeah, what the hell? What else are we going to talk about? Condiments?
Who gives a shit?
Talk about the New York State governor election?
You know, there are things that can happen, right? Like he could try and undermine the thing. He thinks he's better than Ted. He's the wonder kid. He should be coaching AFC Richmond.
Those are the headlines. I mean, that's what he's seeing and listening to. He's listening to people saying Nate's ready for his own team. The headlines are like Nate's ready for his own team.
There's like stuff like that. There could be like that could lead to some conflict, and that could explode one way or the other. Either he's, you know, like he's listened to in this regard, and Ted sucks enough that like Ted leaves or whatever, that he successfully undermines him, and he's coaching AFC Richmond, and season three has to be an East Dillon Lions sort of situation or whatever. Or like other possibilities are, someone else on a different team looks at Nate and wants Nate to be their coach, and Nate leaves, and Nate is like the Jamie Tartt to the coaching staff, you know, and getting out of here, and is going to be picked up by somewhere else, right? And doesn't have like the good influences, as inattentive as they might be right now. Right. You know, that's a possibility. Other possibility is Nate just does some stuff that's like just so untoward he has to get fired, you know. I think like some version of like Nate being the coach of another team, or Nate doing something untoward enough that gets him fired, where like you just can't walk that back. Like, it's not that like you can't live a good life and you can't make up for this and like you can't be okay in other capacities moving forward, but you can't stay here type of deal. Like, those are the two that I think are most on the tip of my mind as far as where we might be going with Nate. I mean, you know, if past is prologue, you know, Ted Lasso as a show often finds a way where like Ted Lasso as a show could find the way where we have a happier ending with Nate.
Sure.
I'm just really worried that that's not where we're going to go.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think it could be in the third season.
Yeah.
I don't think it is in the second season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I think we're probably going to end this season with Nate in a very bad place vis-a-vis AFC Richmond.
Man, I don't like it.
But, I mean, this is the guy. who in the very first episode, in one of the kind of funnier, subtle jokes of the series, when Ted and Beard first come to AFC Richmond and stand on the pitch, and Nate screams and runs across the entire pitch saying, "Stay off the grass," doing who knows what damage to the grass in the process.
Right.
That this is the guy who will literally like cut off his nose to spite his face in that regard.
Yep.
Totally. And will do bad things to Richmond in the name of trying to protect Richmond. So what that looks like when he's in a dark place and when he could get negative feedback or positive feedback that will gas him up and make him feel like he can do it. And then negative feedback that is the spark that strikes that gas. I don't like what that looks like for the rest of the season, especially now as we're starting to get into the late summer here, Josh, both literally and figuratively. Like we only have 5 episodes left. So I just don't know that we're going to get there on a positive way with Nate before the end. There's just a lot of foreboding things happening. Speaking of foreboding things, I want to change track a little bit, unless you have anything else you want to say about Nate.
I don't. Nope.
Yeah. Do you said you think bad things are coming. I don't think bad things are coming with regard to Roy and Keeley. Are you on the same page about this?
We
said it was wrapped up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this is part of a larger narrative about how they're going to not work. I think this is part of a larger narrative about how and why they do work. So I just don't think we're going anywhere negative with that. I know the Ted stuff is probably going to get darker before we get lighter, but I think we've probably seen the worst moments of Ted for this season in terms of like
that
bad it gets. You think it's going to get worse for Ted?
There's a lot of road still to travel this season. With Roy and Keeley, I'm less concerned. With Ted as a character, he's the main character. Like, he's going to have to be in the heart of a lot of this conflict. And I think, like, some of that reckoning that may be coming as it pertains to Nate, could be particularly dark for Ted to have to face and weather. Like,
That's true.
Like, we don't think that we're leaving season 2 without seeing Ted Lasso cry. No way. Like, that dude's crying by the end of the season, which can be cathartic and good.
Yeah,
for sure.
He may be crying by the end of next episode, I feel like.
You know, but like, they're like, he is, his fists are clenched right now. You know, forget like the Roy Kent, like, filled with fury stuff. Like, there is Ted is a bomb waiting to go off. You know, it was really, this does bear mentioning. It was like, it was really, really tense, that second therapy scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jason Sudeikis is great. Like, he really is. Excellent. And obviously, he has a lot of personal experience, recent personal experience, to tap into with a lot of stuff about this character, such that people have speculated, like, how much is life imitating art, art imitating life? But at bare minimum, like, he's really good at turning this up. I mean, one of his famous SNL characters was the asshole just chomping gum and being an asshole, right? Like, Sudeikis is able to play this goofy puppy dog of Ted Lasso, but we know he's able to play the prick or the asshole. Like, we know he's got that level in him. And to see a little bit of that with his, what I would say is an exceptionally immature rant, something that I probably thought when I was like 15 about therapy or about people, well, since you're being paid to do a job, you don't care, you know, like, that is such an immature view of the world. And the way he expressed it as an adult was so full of anger, such a good, tense moment. Really good to map those three scenes for sure. And to see how those three scenes, in sequence really played out. But he was exceptional in that scene. And that was tapping into something very angry, very real, right? Like, that was there for the character Ted Lasso. He's angry about a lot, and he feels burned and feels lied to. And he also knows that it's wrong in some way and that it is a defense, because when he is put on blast about it, that is ultimately what really works. Like, that's what fixes the hostility or the anger between them, that she is able to call him out for it, point out why it's wrong, and he knows that she's right about that. Makes that third scene so good. It couldn't work without the tension of the second one. But I just think, as far as darkness goes, I do think that, you know, I agree with you that he could be seeing some more difficult moments, but I feel like he's going to find them armed with support that he was rejecting before or not seeking before. And to me, that means he's in a better place than he was when he walked off that pitch against Tottenham. So that's what I meant by it's not going to get worse for Ted. Like, I feel like the fact that he is actively receiving support means that he's in a better place than he was when he walked off the pitch. I can't say, though, that the scene with Trent Krim, like, that's coming back, right?
Yeah, I would expect so. I would expect so for sure.
Even if it's just him owning up to that lie and meeting with Trent later and really doing an expose and breaking down how all that played out, I feel like that's coming back. I guess it could come back in a more negative way and there could be something more difficult to deal with. I mean, does Nate know why Ted ran off the pitch? I guess he doesn't, right?
No, I don't think so. As far as we can tell, does Beard?
Good question. That's what we talked about with the Beard and Jane of it all, right? Last episode, or two episodes ago, I can't remember which. I guess it was last episode. Beard says, like, I'll check on Ted. I'm sure he's fine. And then we see Beard leave with Jane, and Ted's nowhere to be found. That's not exactly support. We talked about how Beard being connected with Jane in the way that he is and how it is so deep and so personal in the way that it is has made Beard maybe not always there for Ted. We've talked about the moments where Beard is absent from Ted. It is because of Jane. So I don't know if Beard even knows. I suspect that Beard suspects. Whether he knows or not, I don't know. Dr. Sharon knows. I don't know if anyone else knows. Rebecca probably knows or at least suspects. I'm just a little concerned if Nate finds that out. Is that the thing that he chooses to expose?
Right.
The Tottenham situation. Like, if that's the thing, that could be difficult. Like, that's the thing I'm not sure about. And, you know, I don't know, how we can rank the microaggressions, like letting Higgins use Nate's office without asking Nate, right? Like, I don't know where we can position those, but you stack all of them up, you can easily see how if Nate found that out about Ted, it could be weaponized very quickly.
Right.
And then that's where the Trent Krim could come into it.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too, is like, so we've seen Ted have a panic attack twice on the show now, right? Like, we've seen two serious panic attacks for Ted. And relatively speaking, they resolved relatively well in the moments, right? Like, he receives immediate support from Rebecca. She shows up. He has a friend. She helps him breathe.
She has a one-night stand.
She gives him cover of night to get out of there. And then, that later that evening, he has a one-night stand.
He does also get divorced at some point in there, but go on. I'm with you on this.
You know? So, the relative, like, immediate aftermath of that, you know, is not...
5 stars.
Not awful. With the second one... The team wins. No one is really questioning what's going on with him in a major way other than what we see with Trent this week, which was uncomfortable for sure.
Uncomfy.
And he goes into therapy and begins having something of a support structure in that regard. The point being that, like, the incidents kind of, like, calm down and resolve without, like, major public explosive incident or him, like, making massively bad decisions in the aftermath or in the moment of having a panic attack. But just checking into therapy is not curing this thing, you know, like, just starting these conversations, especially with Sharon, is not going to fix it. And if anything, just from my own experience of, like, beginning the process of, like, really vividly engaging this stuff can exacerbate it. And so on the panic attack tip, I feel like there is more to explore here. There are, I'm concerned that there may be an inevitability to seeing another attack, and that he, I don't want to, I'm a little, I don't love how I'm phrasing it, but, like, it may not go as well the next time, you know, like, if it happens during an interview, during a press conference, which, not for nothing, you think back to that first press conference of the whole show, where he spits out the sparkling water and everything like that. And in the wake of everything else, does not play nearly as comedically as it did back then. I'm concerned. I'm concerned for, you know, let's call it panic attack 3 and what that might look like and where that might occur and how Ted might react and what he may need to clean up as a result.
I guess I am too. I sort of feel like the big hurdle for Ted was getting in, was asking for help. And then now that he's cleared that hurdle, I mean, I'm repeating myself, but I understand what you're saying. And I agree that things could go badly for Ted. I just feel like he's in a much better place than he ever was before. It's not to say that he's fixed, and it's not to say that bad things won't happen. It's just that he now can get the support that he needs to help him through those bad things, which to me means he's fundamentally better off than he was when he didn't have it. And I would also place some of the same markers out there and basically say the Christmas episode with Rebecca, like he has people that he knows he can lean on for support. Yeah. This is just a different situation. It doesn't mean, I mean, even after he received that support from Rebecca, he still had the panic attack at the football stadium because, you know, as it turns out, wanting to feel better is not enough. Like, obviously, it, like you said, maintenance is work, like, and it is ongoing. I just feel like since he now knows where the mechanic is, he's in a better position than he was when he didn't even believe in mechanics. So that's the part I do feel more uplifted about this particular episode with regard to where Ted is now than I did before. And I do feel like, okay, whatever happens, I feel like Ted's going to get through it, which of course I probably could have always felt because this is the show Ted Lasso. And this is a show that seems to say that, you know, if you lean into the positivity, if you walk on with hope in your heart, you'll never walk alone. Like, that's why we end the season the way we do in season one. But I still feel like, the worst stuff that's going to happen may not really center around Ted, even if we do have more difficult Ted moments to come, which surely are coming. What about, this is out of left field, but I've seen it enough online that I want you to address it because you will sometimes hairball your way out of these things, or you will sometimes buy in.
Yeah.
People believe that one of the big foreboding things that's happening on Ted Lasso is the Higgins family relationship, that something bad is coming in that regard because it keeps being brought up as something good. Do you put any stock in that whatsoever?
At the risk of, what did you say? We expose our belly to get stabbed in the ribs by yes. the show.
Yeah.
At the risk of exposing my considerable belly. No, I put no stock in that.
Yeah, I don't really either. I understand why people are worried because this is a television show and you check off your way through these things. But, and there's no doubt that the Higgins relationship continues, including in this episode, to be mentioned, to be highlighted, to be brought up as a source of positivity and positive energy. But that doesn't mean that something negative is going to happen. This is Ted Lasso, after all. It doesn't have to be that everything has a sense of foreboding or negativity. I think there's some residual foreboding or negative energy from some of these other storylines bleeding into people's interpretations of that. I don't think it means something bad is happening for the Higgins family. I mean, if you map that out, the reality of it is they have a good relationship. So I don't think the bad thing that could happen would be one of them leaving the other. The only thing that could happen would be something tragic happening. And I just don't see that.
Yeah.
I don't see why the show would want to do that. It just seems like too much. And I don't see the grist that they would get from doing that.
It's so far off my radar that I didn't even know it was on anybody's radar.
Well, and that's why I wanted you to address it so that we can be done with it.
Totally.
What about with Rebecca and Sam? That we moved the needle
cute.
A little bit this episode.
No,
we had a little
meet
cute. Yeah.
It's cute.
Any more positive energy or I mean, the whole team is involved now and invested in this mystery message that Sam is sending. I mean, they are crowding him around. They are invested in the three dots. That can't be good, right?
Why would it be necessarily awful?
Well, in a world where Sam and Rebecca acknowledge this, they meet up, the two of them know, there's going to be a lot of people now invested in finding this out.
Yeah.
It's not something that they can easily like bypass or hand wave away. Like, people want to know. They are invested in this. There's popcorn being eaten. So tea will have to be spilled later. And I just don't know. I don't know if that just impacts any potential relationship that they would have by the result of all those people invested, all their coworkers are in on it. I don't know. I just feel like that could be bad. If you want to talk about a sense of foreboding, I mean, we talked about how do we bring Rupert back into the show? Do we even want Rupert back in the show? Why didn't we really have a resolution to the Dubai Air plotline? you can imagine a world, as we've talked about in this podcast, where the Sam and Rebecca of it all becomes news, and Rupert gets involved. Maybe the Dubai Air thing comes back at that point because Sam was so clearly involved in that and Rebecca was so clearly involved in that. And even though they weren't in a relationship then, how would people read that or map that?
Right.
Like, that's the negative energy I feel like is coming for them. I don't know that this episode changed my feelings about that one way or the other.
I'm definitely still worried about, like, how Rupert fits into it, as we were talking about, I believe last week. There is a yellow brick road that you could walk from Rupert to Sam and Rebecca that, takes you to some bad places. don't eat the apples from the tree, you know, yes. Like, I'm worried about that.
Oil can.
Yeah. But I'm not, if Roy could use that.
he could use a whistle too, Josh. Whistle.
I know a lot of people enjoyed Jamie being the one. This is from Tessa. Tessa had written and said, I loved Jamie being the one who secondhandedly gave Roy the perfect relationship advice for his fight with Keely. How did you feel about that, Antonio? Just sort of like, I don't know, like sort of like the way that Jamie is utilized in this episode as far as the show's attitude towards Jamie Tart right now.
The only thing that triggers me a little bit is when Jamie shows up in the boot room when they're all having their Roy sesh.
Sure, yes, yeah,
fair. It's just like, I don't need Jamie to be actively involved in the Roy and Keely situation. I don't need that. I don't want it. It makes me feel negative things. I don't need that and want it. I don't think the show's going to do anything about that, but that's a thing that the show has done something with in the past. And it was an issue with Roy and Keely in the past in the Diamond Dogs episode. So, is it a thing that comes back? I really hope not. I love, otherwise, the deploying of Jamie and the way they did when he walks in. He's asking if you can take his name off his jersey and put it back on, but bigger. Hilarious. Like, very funny thing for Jamie Tart to be asking. And then, of course, I think it's really funny that Jamie is the one, unintentionally. I didn't even say anything wrong that time. Like, that was not a good Mancunian accent. I apologize. Yeah, I love that. I love that. And Roy hated it, which also made me love it. You know, just Roy screaming profanity about it, of all the people to help Roy have that epiphany that it's Jamie Tart is great. Yeah. So, you know, Roy wants Jamie to die of the incurable condition of being a little bitch. And here's Jamie telling Roy, I got to give him space. You know, I had to give him space. The best thing I could do. Pep coached me. Believe me, I know. So I think that was great. I love that. I love Jamie Tart in this season. He's really funny. This sort of wounded, messed up superstar guy who is trying to find his own way and still capable of being Jamie Tart, in all the ways that he is Jamie Tart. I love that.
Yeah. Any other free kicks you want to get into before we close out?
Speaking of the Jamie and Roy scene there, very funny soccer joke, a football joke, when Jamie mentions that he was coached by Pep. Pep is the coach. Pep Guardiola is Josep Pep Guardiola is the coach of Manchester City, but also famously has coached at some of the top clubs in the world and is considered to be a tactical wizard. But the Dutch Jan Maas there points out that a lot of Pep's tactics were borrowed from the Dutch legend, who, if you're pronouncing it in the English way, you would call Johan Cruyff, famous for not only his coaching, but the Cruyff turn, famous move on the football pitch. But the Dutch pronunciation, of course, is different, and Jan Maas puts that on blast. I really like that. It's one of those throwaway jokes they sometimes have, like all of the out-of-work managers who have been calling AFC Richmond, waiting to see if Ted will be sacked, and some of the actual pundits that they're using. This is another fun, like Cruyff versus Cruyff. Kind of thing. So very funny there. The Groundhog Day opening with the I Got You Babe.
Yeah, sure, you sure, like sure, that? Sure. Yeah. I think it definitely got me in the headspace, no pun intended, of where we were going with the Roy and Keely story for this episode, which is this idea of like every day is just the damn same thing.
Yep.
SSDD, you know? So like, Roy Kent would, not just punch, what's his face? Steven Tobolowsky in the face and
Ned?
Yeah.
Ned Ryerson?
Yeah, that would not end well.
Needle Nose Ned, well. Ned the Head.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't. He would headbutt him, first of all. Second of all, yeah, Roy Kent and Groundhog Day is something I really would like to see as Phil Connor. So
he would read so much.
If we could CGI that, that would be great. He would read so much. He really would. But you can also picture him mastering the piano and then playing to the mirth of all the onlookers, or giving Michael Shannon tickets to WrestleMania. All these things
are depending on the day he's trapped in. I actually don't know how much Roy Kent minds Groundhog Day.
Yeah, he might be okay with it. He seems to be fine with what's happening with Keeley, so he might well be okay with it.
Yeah, depending on what's on tap.
Look, part of the problems for these athletes is when they retire, they become unmoored from their routine. Like, routine is what he craves.
Exactly.
So, yeah, could be great for him. Could be great for him. I highly doubt he likes groundhogs as a concept, though, or as an animal. Just doesn't seem like it would be something. So,
yeah. You have a lot to say about their wishy-washiness regarding their own shadows, I feel like.
Just see it or don't. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Should have get off the pot. That was good. I really enjoyed that. What about the Sex in the City stuff? You're a better Sex in the City guy than I. I could speak on the Da Vinci Code and the book.
Carrie treated Aiden like crap. There's no doubt about it, but also Aiden is trash. They're all trash. They all suck. And I know some people are like, whoa, Aiden was fine. What's your problem? Aiden was whining. He was doing, I can't stand Aiden. Everything about Aiden just really irritates me. Was Carrie good to Aiden? No, decidedly not. Absolutely bad to Aiden, in fact. But that whole relationship was toxic. Takes two to tango on something like that, and I feel like Aiden is a piece of it. So thumbs down on that whole relationship. Roy and Keeley are doing much better than Aiden and Carrie, thankfully. But if Keeley ever starts getting nervous about any home improvement projects and what that means for her independence as it pertains to her relationship with Roy, I think that's where we start getting nervous and start having to map Carrie and Aiden onto Roy and Keeley a little more seriously.
I know it's not Aiden, but if I see Roy Kent with a post-it note, I'm going to be a little nervous.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, he would never do it. He would never burger Keeley. Put some relish on that, but he would never do that.
Put some relish on that burger.
No, he would never burger Keeley. He would never.
He clearly is. He just is that into her. That's clearly the thing. He calls her.
He would never the Russian Keeley. Like, you know, he's. He would never big time Keeley either, Mr. Big Time. He would never leave her at City Hall and then be like, I made a huge mistake. Carrie, I'm sorry. Like that, we wouldn't have to go there. We wouldn't have to go there.
Good north.
True north.
Yeah. True north. Yeah, you found your true north, your lone star.
Yeah.
I did
Can
like
you tell that I'm ready to do the Sex and the City podcast when we get to, and just like that, the HBO Max continuation of the Sex and the City mythology. I'm ready to go.
Yes, and can you tell I am ready to not listen to a single second of that? Fair enough.
Listen, Emily Fox and I are ready to go. We are ready to go. We were born ready for this.
You guys enjoy that.
Yeah, we will.
I will just sit over here and write blogs about my friends and put everyone on blast in my life.
I think you'd really like it. Not the show, but I feel like we're going to have a lot to say and it's going to be good. Can't miss television. Can't miss television podcasting.
I did like how Keeley in the boot room said that, look, I think Roy's the cat's pajamas. And then Roy said the same thing to Keeley in private when he was forcing her to bathe with her dirty feet. So that was nice that they both referred to each other in the same kind of way, an affectionate way, when Roy having no idea that Keeley said that about him and him saying it to her. I thought that was really cute.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to their connection and why they do work ultimately. But things that don't work, it was so rough for me. We saw the positive callback to season one with the box with the face on it, when Nate came to see his parents. Of course, that was a suggestion box that Nate made with, I guess it was his niece, maybe.
Yeah. That's cute.
In season one. Yeah. Very cute. This was the St. Patrick's Day themed one. Nate makes the face at it. It's a reminder that there are some positive things in Nate's life, but it's a reminder that's juxtapositioned with the negative reminder of his father, probably yelling about Brexit at the newspaper with about the changing policies. I would imagine Nate's dad is involved in that discourse. I'm not sure one way or the other, and I don't feel qualified to speak on what his position would be, but I feel like that's the sort of thing he's probably ranting about. They're all scum, you know, they're all screwing this up, et cetera, et cetera. But that was so mean of his dad, even though I think it was probably good advice. The timing was so terrible, so cruel for him not to recognize that all his son wanted in that moment was a little bit of approval.
Yep.
And that maybe a little bit would go such a long
so
way.
So far, yeah. That sucks.
Especially since Nate really is buying into his own press. It was interesting that he pulled Holiday in for Colin, like so specific and so negative. I mean, there are Holiday Inns in the UK, as I'm given to understand. So not a thing that he wouldn't say, but just a very specific put down. As Beard said, very weird. How did you like Josh, though? Let's talk about Beard as Batman. We didn't really give that the screen time.
That's what I want. this is my guy.
Yes.
Coach Beard disappearing like Batman. When Nate turns around to like continue the conversation after Beard, and you know, look, to be determined on like did Beard handle this properly? I don't think he handled it improperly necessarily in terms of you know, trying to like keep that, like Ted's got enough to worry about, maybe is this part of his thinking that he doesn't need to be involved with this, and Beard having enough confidence in his own abilities, as he should, right? Like, he has a job to do too, to like set this right and at least get the culture of the coaching staff in the right place. So like, I feel like how Beard handled Nate, I don't have too many issues with, and it was hard to, I think, imagine that Nate would then go on and do what he did next. But we'll see how it shakes out from there. But the fact that he gives that speech to Nate, and then Nate turns around and then turns back around to say something more to Beard, and Beard is gone. Like, Nate's Commissioner Gordon, and Beard is the dark freaking knight, the caped crusader. The capped crusader.
The capped crusader. He's wearing the Jane hat.
He's wearing that artful Dodger hat. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And Nate looks up, which is always so funny when you got a moment like this. As though Beard would be like spider linked to the ceiling.
This is
like,
what I want. This is my stuff.
Very good. Yeah. I thought of you as soon as I saw it. I was like, Josh is going to eat that
up.
That's
my Beard content. That's what I want.
What about, speaking of Beard content, we talked about how Ted notices that, and he references like it's like falling asleep with the stove on from drinking too much while watching Citizen Kane. We talked about how maybe Beard's doing the right thing, maybe he's not. But what we didn't talk about, Josh, is are the Jerky Boys a national treasure?
No, pass.
You're out on the Jerky Boys.
Yeah, fine. They're fine. Whatever.
I was a big Jerky Boys guy myself.
I believe it. I buy it.
I went and saw the movie in the theater.
I'm sure you did.
It was a very specific New York vibe to me as a kid in the Midwest, these Jerky Boys. I loved all the tapes. I was all in.
Yeah,
I was
my childhood memories of crank calling and the like. Let's call it a mixed bag.
Oh, no. Were you crank called?
Let's call it a mixed bag.
That's all we're going to get into.
Antonio, I give a lot of myself on these podcasts.
Yes, we'll have two more therapy sessions before we get to this.
I hand over a lot of myself to you out there. I'm going to keep this one to myself.
That's fair. I'll move off the Jerky Boys. I think maybe one of the Jerky Boys called you at one point. That's my operating theory. I'm going to go back and review the tapes.
Oh man.
I'm gonna review the tapes and find young Josh Wiggler being called by a Jerky Boy
singular, and see
what happens.
Do it.
How about the sprinklers? Did you enjoy the train North by Northwest going into the tunnel moment?
Oh, I missed this.
Oh, well, it's just Roy and Keely when Roy is turning Keely on by simply reading, and she climbs up onto his lap, and then the next thing you see are the sprinklers exploding onto the pitch.
Oh, that's lovely.
A direct cut, yeah.
Evocative.
Yeah. Very evocative.
Yeah.
Very evocative, let's just say.
Yes.
Very evocative. Did we talk about, I think we did, but there are a couple really good lines. The line that really wins Ted over by Dr. Sharon, she knew that it would be a good line. I can't be your mentor without sometimes being your tormentor.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was great.
So Ted.
Yeah.
And that is like a really great therapeutic skill, is to kind of meet your client where they are, I think.
She knew it.
And begin, you know, like, you know, you're both, you know, learning about each other in a lot of ways, I think, often. And like, speaking, you know, speaking Ted's language, like that's going to be the thing that, you know, sort of cuts through some of the red tape.
Speaking of speaking a specific language, what are your views on jazz scatting, Josh?
I also in the vein of the Jerky Boys don't really want to get into it.
Oh no, someone once crank called you and jazz scatted, didn't they?
I really don't want to talk about it. I give a lot of myself, you know. I think this one I want to keep. I want to keep this one. Yeah, this one's for me. This one's for me.
We'll skip that. We'll skip the jazz scatting. Clearly a sore spot that I did not know existed. Yeah,
this one I'll keep. I'll hang on to it.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. Yeah. So that was really it. The needle drop at the end was Cream, I Feel Free. Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker joint. Eric Clapton, noted racist and asshole. Right. Ginger Baker seems like a cool dude. So. That's Cream. I Feel Free. That's Nate, I think, feeling free to just put people on blast and feeling good about it. And
For sure.
Just living out there on the edge and no problem with it. So I just don't like where we're at with Nate. And I don't think it's going in a better direction. I think it's going to get way worse.
Well, where we are going next is Man City. That's season 2, episode 8, Man City. So like this is obviously like a spot where a lot of different characters are, you know, have potential investment in terms of their stories, everything like that. You know, could be a big Jamie episode. I think, like, to the point of, like, could Nate get poached or could he, like, leave? Could this be a point where that happens? I don't know. So we'll see. It's the 18th episode overall of Ted Lasso, the 8th episode of season 2, and 5 more episodes on the board here for season 2 of Apple TV Plus's Ted Lasso, Antonio.
Unbelievable. And it seems like, it just seems like last week we were talking about how episode 5 should have been the second episode. So here we are, the second week, I should say. So here we are on episode 7, just a couple weeks later, and it feels like the season's almost over. Like, I don't know how this goes, but here we are.
Here we are. We'll be back next week. We want your feedback. Of course, Ted Lasso at postshowrecaps.com. Keep the conversation going with us in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. If you want to talk about Ted Lasso with a really great community of people who are watching and loving the show and having really, really insightful conversations about what's happening on screen. You can, of course, also talk to us on the Twitters. I'm at Round Howard. Antonio's at AC Mazzaro. I'm not prompting you. You just say whatever you want.
That was not dead air.
You know.
I'm at AC Mazzaro, like I have been every other podcast. It hasn't changed since then. There's 2 Z's and 1 R in there, in whatever order you see fit. And I am Josh, a strong and capable man.
Yes, you are. You always have been.
I'm looking forward. I want to see what happens with Colin. We've had enough of Colin this season and his mantra, and there's little notes throughout. I feel like something good is coming. I hope something good is coming.
Yeah. I just want a Dom on the show so we get Dom and Colin at some
point. That's my dream. That's where I always support Dom and Colin.
That's where I'm at too. All right. We'll be back next week, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers.